From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. Walking at Dead by Zena Henderson. I looked up in surprise, and so did Ma, and so did Pa. Aunt Dade was moving. Her hands were coming together and moving upward till the light from the fireplace had a rest from flickering on that cracked, wrinkled wreck that was her face. But the hands didn't stay long. They dropped back to her saggy lap like two dead bats, and the sunken old mouth that had fallen in on its lips years before I was born puckered and worked, and let Aunt Dade's tongue out a little ways before it pulled it back in again. I swallowed hard. There was something alive about the tongue, and alive wasn't a word I'd associate with Aunt Dade. Ma let out a sigh that was almost a snort and took up her fancy work again. "Guess it's about time," she said, over a sudden thrum of rain against the darkening parlor windows. "Nah," said Pa. "Too soon. Years yet." "Don't know about that," said Ma. "Pa here's going on 20. Count back to the last time. Remember that, Dev?" "Aw," Pa squirmed in his chair. Then he rattled the weekly wardrobe open and snapped it back to the state news. "Better watch out," he warned, his eyes answering hers. "I might learn more this time and decide I need some other woman." "Can't scare me," said Ma, over the strand of embroidery thread she was holding between her teeth to separate it into strands. "'Twon't be your place this time, anyhow. Once for each generation, hasn't it been? It's Paul this time." "He's too young," protested Pa. "Some things young'uns should be sheltered from," he was stern. "Paul's older and you were at his age," said Ma. "Schooling does that to you, I guess." "Sheltered from what?" I asked. "What about last time? What's all this just 'cause Aunt Dade moved without anyone telling her to?" "You'll find out," said Ma, and she shivered a little. "We make jokes about it, but only in the family," she warned. "This is strictly family business. But it isn't any joking matter. I wish the good Lord would take Aunt Dade. It's creepy. It's not healthy." "Ah, simmer down, Maylene," said Pa. "It's not all that bad. Every family's got its problems. Ours just happens to be Aunt Dade. It could be worse. At least she's quiet and clean and biddable, and that's more than you can say for some other people's old folks." "Old folks is right," said Ma. "We hit the jackpot there." "How old is Aunt Dade?" I asked, wondering just how many years it had taken to suck so much sap out of her that you wondered that the husk of her didn't rustle when she walked. "No one rightly knows," said Ma, folding away her fancy work. She went over to Aunt Dade and put her hand on the sagging shoulder. "Bedtime, Aunt Dade," she called loud and clear. "Time for bed." I counted to myself. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And Aunt Dade was on her feet, her bent old knees wavering to hold her scanty weight. I shook my head wonderingly and half grinned. Never failed, up at the count of 10, which was pretty good, seeing as she never started stirring until the count of 5. It took that long for Ma's words to sink in. I watched Aunt Dade follow Ma out. You couldn't push her to go anywhere. But she followed real good. Then I said to Pa, "What's Aunt Dade's whole name? How's she kin to us?"
"Don't rightly know," said Pa.
"I could maybe figure it out, how she's kin to us, I mean, if I took the time. A lot of it. Great-great-grandpa started calling her Aunt Dade. Other folks thought it was kind of disrespectful, but it stuck to her."
He stood up and stretched and yawned.
"Morning comes early," he said. "Better hit the hay." He pitched the paper at the wood box and went off towards the kitchen for his bed snack.
"What'd he call her Aunt Dade for?" I hollered after him.
"Well," yelled Pa, his voice muffled, most likely from coming out of the icebox, "he said she should have been dead a long time ago, so he called her Aunt Dead." I figured on the edge of the Hogs Breeders Gazette. "Let's see. Around 30 years to generation. Me, Pa, Grandpa, Great-Grandpa, Great-Great-Grandpa. And let's see, for me, that'd be another great. That makes 6 generation. That's 180 years. I chewed on the end of my pencil, a funny flutter inside me. "Course, that's just guessing," I told myself. Maybe Pa just piled it on for devilment. Minus a generation, that's 150. I put my pencil down real careful. Should have been dead a long time ago. How old was Aunt Dade that they said that about her 1.5 centuries ago? Next morning, the whole world was fresh and clean. Last night's spell of rain had washed the trees and the skies and settled the dust. I stretched in the early morning cool and felt like life was a pretty good thing. Vacation before me and nothing much to be done on the farm for a while. Ma called breakfast and I followed my nose to the buttermilk pancakes and sausages and coffee and out ate Pa by 1.5 stacks of pancakes.
"Well, son, looks like you're finally a man," said Pa.
"When you can out-eat your Pa." Ma scurried in from the other room. "Aunt Dade sitting on the edge of her bed," she said anxiously, "and I didn't get her up."
Said Pa. "Begins to look that way, doesn't it?"
"Think I'll go up to Honan's Lake," I said, tilting my chair back, only half hearing what they were saying. "Feel like a couple of days fishing."
"Better hang around, son," said Pa.
"We might be needing you in a day or so."
"Oh," I said, a little put out.
I had my mouth all set for Honan's Lake.
"Well, unset it for a spell," said Pa. "There's a whole summer ahead."
"But what for?" I asked. "What's cooking?"
Pa and Ma looked at each other, and Ma crumpled the corner of her apron in her hand.
"We're going to need you," she said.
"How come?" I asked.
"To walk Aunt Dade," said Ma.
"To walk Aunt Dade?"
I thumped my chair back on 4 legs. "But my gosh, Ma, you always do for Aunt Dade."
"Not for this," said Ma, smoothing at the wrinkles in her apron.
"Aunt Dade won't walk this walk with a woman. It has to be you." I took a good look at Aunt Dade that night at supper. I'd never really looked at her before. She'd been around ever since I could remember. She was as much a part of the house as the furniture. Aunt Dade was just so-so sized. If she'd been fleshed out, she'd be about Ma for bigness. She had a wisp of black hair twisted into a walnut-sized knob at the back of her head. The ends of the hair sprayed out stiffly from the knob like a worn-out brush. Her face looked like wrinkles had wrinkled on wrinkles and all collapsed into the emptiness of no teeth and no meat on her skull bones. Her tiny eyes, almost hidden under the crepe of her eyelids, were empty. They just stared across the table through me and on out into nothingness, while her lips sucked open at the top of the spoon Ma held, inhaled the soft stuff Ma had to feed her on, and then shut, working silently until her skinny neck bobbed to swallowing.
"Doesn't she ever say anything?" I finally asked.
Pa looked quick at Ma and then back down at his plate.
"Never heard a word out of her," said Ma.
"Doesn't she ever do anything?" I asked.
"Why, sure," said Ma. "She shells peas real good when I get her started."
"Yeah."
I felt my spine crinkle, remembering once when I was little. I sat on the porch and passed the pea pods to Aunt Dade. I was remembering how after I ran out of peas, her withered old hands had kept reaching and taking and shelling and throwing away with nothing but emptiness in them.
"And she tears rug rags real good, and she can pull weeds if nothing else is growing where they are."
"Why?" I started and stopped.
"Why do we keep her?" asked Ma.
"She doesn't die. She's alive."
"What else should we do? She's no trouble. Not much, anyway."
"Put her in a home somewhere," I suggested.
"She's in a home now," said Ma, spooning up custard for Aunt Dade.
"And we don't have to put out cash for her. Besides, they'd never walk her. No telling what had happened to her."
"What is this walking business, anyway? Walking where?"
"Down hollow," said Pa, cutting a quarter of a cherry pie. "Down to the oak." He drew a deep breath and let it out. "And back again."
"Why down there?" I asked. "Hollow's full of weeds and mosquitoes. Besides, it's
"Spooky," said Ma, smiling at me.
"Well, yes, spooky," I said. "There's always a quiet down there when the wind's blowing everywhere else, or else a wind when everything's still.
Why down there?"
"There's where she wants to walk," said Pa. "You walk her down there."
While I stood up, "Let's get it over with. Come on, Aunt Dade."
"She ain't ready yet," said Ma.
"She won't go till she's ready."
"Well, Pa, why can't you walk her then?" I asked. "You did it once."
"Once is enough," said Pa, his face shut and still. "It's your job this time. You be here when you're needed. It's a family duty. Them fish will wait."
"Okay, okay," I said. "But at least tell me what the deal is. It sounds like a lot of hogwash to me."
There wasn't much to tell. Aunt Dade was a family heirloom, like, but Pa never heard exactly who she was to the family. She had always been like this, just as old and so dried up. She wasn't even repulsive. I guess it's only when there's enough juice for rotting that a body is repulsive, and Aunt Dade was years and years past that. That must be why the sight of her wet tongue jarred me. Seems like once in every 20-30 years, Aunt Dade gets an awful craving to go walking, and always someone has to go with her. A man. She won't go with a woman. And the man comes back changed.
"You can't help being changed," said Pa.
"When your eyes look on things your mind can't," Pa swallowed. "Only time there was any real trouble with Aunt Dade," said Pa, "was when the family came west. That was back in your great-great-grandpa's time. They left the old place and came out here in covered wagons, and Aunt Dade didn't even notice until time for her to walk again. Then she got violent. Great-grandpa tried to walk her down the road, but she dragged him all over the place, coursing like a hunting dog that's lost a trail, only with her eyes blind-like, all through the dark. Great-grandpa finally brought her back almost at sunrise. He was a pert nigh a broken man, what with cuts and bruises and scratches, and walking Aunt Dade, she'd finally settled on Down Hollow."
"What does she walk for?" I asked. "What goes on?"
"You'll see, son," said Pa. "Words wouldn't tell anything, but you'll see." That evening, Aunt Dade covered her face again with her hands. Later, she stood up by herself, teetering by her chair a minute, one withered old hand pawing at the air, till Ma, with a look at Pa, set her down again. All next day, Aunt Dade was quiet. But come evening, she got restless. She went to the door 3 or 4 times, just waiting there like a puppy, asking to go out. but after my heart had started pounding and I had hurried to her and opened the door, she just waved her face blindly at the darkness outside and went back to her chair. Next night was the same until about 10 o'clock, just as Ma was thinking of putting Aunt Dade to bed. First thing we knew, Aunt Dade was by the door again, her feet tramping up and down impatiently, her dry hands whispering over the door. "It's time," said Pa, quiet-like, and I got all cold inside. "But it's blacker than pitch tonight," I protested. "It's as dark as the inside of a cat. No moon." Aunt Dade whimpered. I nearly dropped. It was the first sound I'd ever heard from her. "It's time," said Pa again, his face bleak. "Walk her, son. And Pa, bring her back." "Down Hollow's bad enough by day," I said, watching half sick as Aunt Dade spread her skinny arms out against the door, her face pushed up against it hard, her saggy black dress looking like spilled ink dripped down. "But on a moonless night, walk her somewhere else then," said Pa, his voice getting thin, "if you can. But get going, son, and don't come back without her." And I was outside, feeling the shifting of Aunt Dade's hand bones inside my hand as she set off through the dark, dragging me along with her, scared half to death, wondering if the rustling I heard was her skin or her clothes, wondering on the edge of screaming where she was dragging me to, what she was dragging me to. I tried to head her off from Down Hollow, steering her towards the lane or the road or across lots or out into the pasture, but it was like being a dog on a leash. I went my way the length of our two arms, then I went her way. Finally, I gave up and let her drag me, my eyes open to aching, trying to see in the dark so heavy that only a less dark showed where the sky was. There wasn't a sound except the thud of our feet in the dust and a thin, straining hiss that was Aunt Dade's breath and a gulping gasp that was mine. I'd have cried if I hadn't been so scared. Aunt Dade stopped so quick that I plowed into her, breathing in a sudden puff of a smell like a stack of old newspapers that have been a long time in a dusty shed. And there we stood, so close I could touch her, but I couldn't even see a glimmer of her face in the darkness that was so thick it seemed like the whole night had poured itself down into the hollow. But between one blink and another, I could see Aunt Dade. Not because there was any more light, but because my eyes seemed to get more seeing to them. She was yawning, a soft little yawn that she covered with a quick hand, and then she laughed. My throat squeezed my breath. The yawn and the hand movement and the laugh were all young and graceful and beautiful. But the hand and the face were still withered up, old Aunt Dade. "I'm waking up," the voice sent shivers up me. Pleasure shivers. "I'm waking up," said Aunt Dade again, her soft, light voice surprised and delighted. "And I know I'm waking up." She held her hands up and looked at them. "They look so horribly real," she marveled, "don't they?" She held them out to me, and in my surprise I croaked, "Yeah, they do." At the sound of my voice, she jerked all over and got shimmery all around the edges. "He said," she whispered, her lips firming and coloring as she talked. "He said, if ever I could know in my dream that I was just dreaming, I'd be on the way to a cure. I know this is the same recurrent nightmare. I know I'm asleep, but I'm talking to one of the creatures." She looked at me a minute. "One of the people in my dream. And he's talking to me for the first time." Aunt Dade was changing. Her face was filling out and her eyes widening. Her body was straining at the old black dress that wasn't saggy anymore, Before I could draw a breath, the old dress rustled to the ground, and Aunt Dade, I mean she was standing there, light rippling around her like silk, a light that cast no shadows, nor even flickered on the tangled growth in the hollow. It seemed to me that I could see into that light, farther than any human eye ought to see, and all at once the world that had always been absolute bedrock to me became a shimmering edge of something, a path between places, or a brief stopping place. And the wonder that was the existence of mankind wasn't unique anymore.
"Oh, if only I am cured," she cried. "If only I don't ever have to go through this nightmare again."
She lifted her arm and drew herself up into a slim, growing exclamation point.
"For the first time, I really know I'm dreaming," she said. "And I know this isn't real." Her feet danced across the hollow, and she took both my numb hands.
"You aren't real, are you?" she asked. "None of this is it? All this ugly, old dragging?" She put her arms around me and hugged me tight. My hands tingled to the icy fire of her back, and my breath was tangled in the heavy silvery gleam of her hair.
"Bless you for being unreal," she said, "and may I never dream you again."
And there I was, all alone in the dark hollow, staring at hands I couldn't see, trying to see the ice and fire that still tingled on my fingertips. I took a deep shuddery breath and stopped to grope for Aunt Dade's dress that caught at my feet. Fear melted my knees, and they wouldn't straighten up again. I could feel terror knocking at my brain, and I knew as soon as it could break through, I'd go screaming up the hollow like a crazy man, squeezing the black dress like a rattlesnake in my hands. But I heard Pa saying, "Bring her back." And I thought, all my grandpa sighed too. All of them brought her back. It's happened before. And I crouched there, squinching my eyes tight, holding my breath, my fingers digging into my palms, clutching the dress. It might have been a minute, it might have been an hour or a lifetime before the dress stirred in my hands. My knees jerked me upright, and I dropped the dress like a live coal. She was there again, her eyes dreaming shut, her hair swinging like the start of music, her face like every tender thing a heart could ever know. Then her eyes opened slowly, and she looked around her.
"Oh, no," she cried, the back of her hand muffling her words. "Not again. Not after all this time. I thought I was over it."
And I heard her crying in my arms, all that wonderfulness against me, all that softness and sorrow. But she pulled away and looked up at me.
"Well, I'll say it again so I won't forget it," she said, her tears slipping from her face and glittering down through the dark. "And this time it'll work. This is only a dream, my own special nightmare. This will surely be the last one. I have just this one night to live through, and never again, never again. You are my dream. This is all a dream." Her hands touched the wrinkles that started across her forehead. The old black dress was creeping like a devouring snake up her, and her flesh was sagging away before it as it crept. Her hair was dwindling and tarnishing, out of its silvery shining, her eyes shrinking and blanking out.
"No, no," I cried, sick to the marrow, to see Aunt Dade coming back over all that wonder. I rubbed my hand over her face to erase the lines that were cracking across it, but the skin under my fingers stiffened and crumpled and stiffened and hardened, and before I could wipe the feel of dried oldness from the palm of my hand, all of Aunt Dade was there, and the hollow was fading away as my eyes lost their seeing. I felt the drag and snag of weeds and briars as I brought Aunt Dade back. A sobbing Aunt Dade, tottering and weak. I finally had to carry her, all matched sticky and musty in my arms. As I struggled up out of the hollow that was stirring behind me in a wind that left the rest of the world silent, I heard singing in my head, "Life is but a dream. Life is but a dream." But before I stumbled blindly into the blare of light from the kitchen door, I shook the sobbing bundle of bones in my arms, the withered cocoon, the wrinkled seed of such a flowering, and whispered, "Wake up, Aunt Dade. Wake up, you."